I just find it interesting that the Bruins have had a boat between regular season and playoffs. So this is dating back to the year before last at the end, and now this year. They've probably had something like 30 or so games, give or take, with the possibility of having a line of Krejci, Pastrnak, and Hall. Now, a year and a half ago, they elected to go with Hall, Krejci, and Craig Smith and keep that top line together still. And this year, like we've talked about, they've only had a few games together. And even in some of those games, they kind of mixed and matched. And you're talking about not just Bruce Cassidy having this control. Now you're talking about a second head coach in Jim Montgomery, who they just haven't. Because when I think of the Hall, Krejci, Pastrnak combination, I just feel like it hasn't been given a huge chance. It hasn't been given a lot of leash. And I just wonder if the coaching staff is seeing something like what we're talking about, where yes, there is magic to be made, but do the styles of play consistently mesh? And I just feel like if you're Jim Montgomery, because let's be honest, Coyle, Hall, and Frederick was not a combination we had in our preseason bingo cards. And even saying it out loud right now and seeing how it's like not bad, it sounds weird to say. But if you're Jim Montgomery, I think the way you sell it is, Taylor, like, this is your line. Similar to when we talk about Lindholm and McAvoy being on different D pairs, letting them control the ice all by themselves and not have to be with somebody equal to them or better, and kind of like, you know what I'm trying to say. It's kind of like they're doing the same thing here with the forward groups. Like, if you have a line with Pastrnak, Hall, and Krejci, that's a lot of chefs in the kitchen that they want their touches. They have the skill set to execute, but can you create that chemistry where you're all in on the action? And I just feel like it's, while off the ice they would say they have no problem doing that, I think sometimes when you're in the middle of a game, these guys are, you know, the greatest in the world at what they do. They want the puck on their stick, and I just think that if you put Hall on a line with Coyle and Frederick, there's no debating, you know, who we want whose stick we want to have the puck on their stick when you need to create scoring chances. And I think that that's probably how they're selling it to them. And quite honestly, I don't hate the idea. Like, I don't hate the idea of having a third line with Taylor Hall on it. It just feels weird to say, because it just doesn't seem right. But for all the reasons we've talked about, for right now, I have no issue with it.
I think, Brian, also, like, it's like a respect thing, right? Like, when you put three, but when you get put on a line with David Krejci and David Pastrnak, you want to show them respect and give them the puck. So, like, you're taking chances away from yourself as well. And same, like, you see when guys play together and they lose that shoot first mentality a little bit, because they're wanting to dish the puck to a Pastrnak or a Marchand, so that they just feel like that might be the better move rather than them being the one to keep the puck on their stick and go towards the net. So it's kind of weird in that way. When a lot of good guys play with each other, they're kind of like, no, you shoot it. No, you shoot it. You're really good. You shoot it. You have the puck.
Right. Where, like, Trent Frederick he has no doubt. Look, you don't want to be too selfless and, you know, pass up, you know, a golden chance to score. But, like, is David Krejci now? It's twofold, because if you're on a line with Krejci and Pastrnak, in theory, they're going to create a lot of space for you out there, because defenders and oppositions are going to be so focused on, okay, make sure you don't let Pastrnak get loose. Like focus on Pastrnak. And then while you're doing that, oh, wait a minute, here comes Taylor Hall down the left wing streaking, and Krejci's going to hit him, and everybody's focusing on Pastrnak. So there is that element of it too. But from a physicality standpoint, Charlie Coyle's puck protection and size and physicality, along with Trent Frederick, especially in the offensive zone beneath the dots, like, should open up a lot of space with Taylor Hall, because, you know, they're just going to be so difficult to take off the puck, Coyle in particular. So in that sense, he'll get more room playing with them for a different reason. But in tonight's game, you saw Taylor Hall, when he was on the ice with his line mates, kind of taking over plays in a way that you probably wouldn't see him regularly with Pastrnak and Krejci, because they're all, you know, Pasternak in particular is an all-world player. So it's definitely interesting to follow. And the other thing too with Taylor Hall is he's not in the first power play unit. And even then, you can't argue it because the Bruins, I think, have the best power play in the league, or they're right there. And the second unit, as a matter of fact, they've done a lot of the damage in the last handful of games too. I mean, your second unit, you're rolling out Lindholm, Krejci, Taylor Hall, Zacha, and a, you know,
Nick Foligno,
and a Benjamin Button version of Nick Foligno. So it's the depth that they can roll out is pretty impressive. And they're not 19-3 by luck. They're 19-3 because when you have the amount of depth that the Bruins do, as it pertains to game changers and whatnot, it can be somebody every single night. Whereas in the past, you know, they've found their way to have 100 plus point seasons, but it was oftentimes in the back of their power play and their top guys. But now you can have a given night where Zacha goes out there and scores two goals and the Bruins win 3-1, or, you know, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of depth to go around.
Yeah. And you know, you especially think about on a night like tonight when you're facing Tampa, and we know one of their calling cards for all the success they've had in recent years has been how good their third line has been. Like it was critical, you know, 3 years ago when they beat the Bruins in the playoffs. It was critical in both their cup wins. It was critical with kind of, you know, a different look third line, but again, offensive depth last year when they get back to the cup final. And now you see a night like tonight, and it's like, now the Bruins are the team that has that third line where you're like, wow, like there's not many teams that can match up with that. Like that's a damn good third line, especially when you it was a good third line before you swap Zacha and Hall, and now it just looks even stronger, you know, assuming obviously that that second line is able to produce. And I think they've been pretty good so far. I think you're still waiting for, you know, a little bit more, you know, 5-on-5 scoring from them, but for the most part, they've looked good. And, you know, with Hall on the third line, like the one thing that I was thinking of tonight is like the only thing I could think of that really, really is similar is one of the years that the Penguins won the cup when they went back to back. I don't think they did the second year, but the first year, Phil Kessel was on the Penguins' third line. He did not play with Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin. He was on the third line with Nick Bonino and Carl Hagelin. And it was like that, it created so many mismatches in the playoffs because it was like, what team has the depth to match up with a third line that has Phil Kessel on it? Like, you know, he was pretty much in his prime or just getting towards probably the end of his prime years at that point. And it's like, yeah, not many. Like that's a really tough matchup for teams to handle. And it's the same thing now. Like if Taylor Hall stays there, and look, they're not going to roll with this like all season long. There's going to be plenty of changes between now and March and April. And but maybe they settle back on this. Like maybe, you know, they at least have this as an option. And if Hall's playing the way he's capable of playing, that just becomes such a huge problem for other teams. And to figure out like, oh, great, we just survived shifts from the Bergeron line and the Krejci Pasternak line, and now we have to deal with Taylor Hall coming on. Like it's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, first of all, we say this all the time, it's a good problem to have. Like the fact that every single combination seems to find a way to work, you know, it's not a bad thing that you have to, you know, sometimes not even have to, that you can move it around and see what works and how different people play together. And then that way, say you get to the playoffs, you can, you know, you don't have to show your hand, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, perfection lies together. And then next thing you know, check lines split up, Hall's back on it. Like you could go to a bunch of different looks. You're not going to be in a situation where you have to give the team you're playing in the playoffs the same look over and over again. And you might be able to cause some confusion that way, and change the matchups, the coverage, just depending on the team and the game. Sometimes it really just has to do with what team you're playing against, whether or not you would want to have Hall on the second line or the third line, or you know, you'd want to try the perfection line for a small amount of time, or whether that would be your best combo. It depends on your opponent, but to be able to have all those options is a good thing.
And just to put things, just to put their depth up front and into perspective, you know, the Stanley Cup champions from last year, the Colorado Avalanche, and they're also the Bruins' next opponent on Saturday. So just a quick little exercise. Now, there's a pretty important player I'm not going to mention because he's out, but I'm going to read off their lines tonight from their game against the Jets. Just and match this up in your mind when I read these lines off. You have Lehkonen, McKinnon, Rantanen. Obviously, two or three of those guys are elite, elite. Lehkonen's a nice little player. He's nothing crazy. Cogliano, JT Compher, O'Connor, Galchenyuk, Newhook, and Foudy. And then Anton Bleed. And then these two guys I've never heard of before. So I'll say their last names, Megna and Hunt. My point is, now, obviously, Gabe Landeskog, I did not read off. He must be hurt. So but that's the Colorado Avalanche, the defending champs and projected to win the cup this year, one of the favorites. I feel like I'm breaking it out because you guys are breaking it out, but okay. So that just
Landeskog in there.
Brian, you jinxed yourself.
What's that?
You jinxed yourself. You were fine. Then you make a comment about breaking up and then you broke up.
And then you froze right away.
So those were Colorado's lines for tonight versus Jets. Now, all I was getting at was compare that to the Bruins forward lines. Like the Avs are the defending champs and they're probably the odds on favorite to win the cup again this year or be there at the end. And even with Landeskog out of the lineup for Colorado, he insert him back in the lineup, like line for line, the Bruins are right there with Colorado, if not better on paper. So it just goes to show the depth. Now on the back end, Colorado has sick depth too, but so do the Bruins. So my point is that, like, we've seen the Bruins play Carolina. We've seen them play the Rangers, Pittsburgh, Florida, Tampa. These are all some of the top teams in the league. Obviously, we saw them play Toronto, but that was kind of an off game considering the news that broke that day or the day before. But we know what Toronto is. The Bruins are up there with everybody, if not better than most on paper with the depth. So it's just very, very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I wish the Avs were at full strength because even in addition to Landeskog, like, they're also missing Valeri Nichushkin right now, Evan Rodriguez there, you know, what they call middle six, third line signing this offseason, who would have at least helped with some of that depth. So, you know, I still think they're going to be it's a good test for the Bruins. It's still another good opponent to face, but you're not getting them at 100%, which is kind of a bummer because, like, I really just want to see this Bruins team against everyone at their best because you know, they just got Tampa pretty much at their best at full strength and have beaten them twice. They beat Carolina, like, it's really impressive. So, you know, Colorado's next up, but probably Vegas might be a little bit better of a challenge right now for the Western Conference teams. But yeah, I mean, to your point, like, Colorado had great depth last year and then for cap reasons couldn't keep it all together. And we've seen the same thing in Tampa where they weren't able to keep all their depth together. The Bruins won't be able to keep all their depth together probably as soon as next year. At the very least, you know, 2 years from now, but it's hard to do, which is why, like, you really have to take advantage of it when you have it. Like, this is such a golden opportunity for the Bruins because it's extremely difficult to build a roster that's this deep. And we know why the Bruins have been able to do it, because they have Bergeron and Krejci signed at way, way below market value. Like, yeah, if your number one and number two center are signed for combined $3.5 million or whatever, like, yeah, you're going to be able to, you should be able to build a pretty deep roster off that. So yeah, you can line them up against anyone in the league and they're going to stack up really well because other teams just don't have that built-in advantage and, you know, have gone all in other years and ended up in positions where they've had to move on from some guys. So, you know, it's a great situation for the Bruins where they might be kind of hitting their peak as a team in terms of a deep roster as other teams have to do a little bit of regrouping and, you know, long ways to go. We'll see where everyone is at the end of the year, but right now, yeah, you absolutely can stack them up against anyone, Colorado, Tampa, or anyone else.
By the way, to your point about this, the, you know, not getting the Avs at their best, I mean, at least you're not getting them at their best right now when you're still trying to like extend that home winning streak and just make it completely impossible for another team to like knock that record down. So maybe when they play them on the road the following week, you know, if they're healthy, if the Avs are healthy by then, that'll be when you can get your look at them. But as of right now, the Bruins are trying to keep that going, and they have the Avs in Vegas, who are going to be two really tough teams, and obviously the extra motivation for Cassidy to try to end that streak when he comes in with Vegas coming up. So, and by the way, I'm pretty sure that their Western road trip, that the biggest challenge they're going to face is December 9th against the Coyotes.
Yeah, well, Coyotes goalie, Carol, I'm totally going to mispronounce his last name, but Vimelka, he's been on fire. And like, I only noticed this because I saw him like pop up in fantasy hockey when I was looking at potentially replacing Linus Ullmark, if Ullmark had missed time. And I was like, wow, okay, like Arizona's goalie is apparently one of like the best goalies in fantasy hockey and has been red hot recently.
I was being facetious.
I know you were, but what I'm saying
is, actually, Bridget, you're right.
Do not underestimate Carol Vermelka, or of course, Nick Ritchie. Never underestimate Nick Ritchie either.
So, Scott, to the point about the depth earlier and having Bergeron and Krejci at your one and two centers at, you know, whatever it is, at, you know, $3 million or whatever, the roster is set up right now as good as any roster ever has been to try to win a Stanley Cup. And I mean that from different perspectives. I mean that from you know, the depth of the personnel, but also the combination of the players you have on the team and where they're at in their careers, right? Like 2019, it's hard to remember, but because it feels like it was so long ago, and other times I feel like it was yesterday, but McAvoy was only 2 years into his NHL career. And you know, David Pastrnak was still only like 24-ish or 23, whatever he was. Like, their young stars were still young. But right now, I mean, Pastrnak is 26 years old. McAvoy is 24-ish. DeBrusque is 26, I think. Like, they're not kids anymore. Like, in the grand scheme of the world, they are. But in the hockey world, like, they're entering their professional primes. And you combine that with the veterans that have been there and done that, like Krejci and Marchand and Bergeron, obviously. Hampus Lindholm is, you know, 28 years old. He's been around for a long time. Taylor Hall, same thing. Like, it just feels like everything is set up for them to do something this year. And I guess my question to you guys is, how much of a disappointment will it be for you guys if they don't? And I'm even talking if they go to the finals and lose, because this team has been to the finals three times and they've lost twice. And it's Boston's not the type of town where it's forgivable to go to the finals and lose. If you go to the finals, we expect you to win. And the way they've started this year, and with the importance of them winning because of the uncertainty of their future, obviously Bergeron and Marchand aren't around forever, and Krejci, I mean, as soon as possibly next year for a couple of them. Like, would it be disappointing for you guys, given their start and the cap, you know, feng shui they've done, all that, if they don't win this year?
I think if they continue like this, yes. Like, those will become the expectations.
They are. Are they not already?
Internally, yes. Like, that's their expectation. I guess more from kind of like the outside. Oh. I feel like, because so few people going into the season expected them to win the cup or even be a serious contender, that, you know, so much of the start has just been like pleasant surprise. Like, wow, isn't this awesome? And now I think, like, especially as you go through this stretch of games against other tough teams, like, if you keep winning through this, now I think this is when it starts to shift to like, all right, this isn't just a really good start. This isn't just a pleasant surprise or a good story. these are the Stanley Cup favorites.
Don't you already feel like that though? Like you yourself?
I do. Yes.
I feel like that already.
But I'm wondering more from like the bigger picture of the whole Boston sports scene, fans, media,
there's
talk
no
radio,
changing
like
the freaking Patriots people. I'll tell you that right now.
It's still gonna be
Patriots, even if they suck.
No,
and the
I don't mean like what I don't mean like what sports radio is like about. I mean like
say it's that's just how it is here.
No, I mean like how people view the Bruins. Like I think that shift is happening right now, where it's kind of en masse going from great start, pleasant surprise, fun stuff to hey, like, shouldn't this team win the Stanley Cup? Like, they look really good. Maybe we should start talking about them as Stanley Cup favorites. I feel like we're getting there very quickly.
So, personally, if this is the roster that, or I'll put it this way, if they go into the playoffs and they're healthy, and all of their key players or top guys stay healthy and never go down with a serious long-term injury, I'll be very disappointed if they don't, based off of what I've seen now. Because going into the year, like, you know, Nick Foligno has proven now he's not the same player he was last year. He's already matched his point totals from last year. So if anything, it's telling me that last year and the little stint in Toronto may have been his career anomaly. And he's just one example. You know, Pavel Zaka is a really good player. They got AJ Greer is making a difference. You know, all their role players are playing really well. But I would be very disappointed, because I'm watching a team who personnel-wise is better than their counterparts in the Eastern Conference on paper and so far on the ice. And I feel like in 2013, you ran into a Blackhawks team that was in the middle of a dynasty and in all likelihood may have been a player better than you on paper. And there was no shame in losing to them, despite how gut-wrenching Game 6 was. Fact of the matter is Bergeron probably wouldn't have played in Game 7 anyway, and they may have lost that series anyway. Now, we can go back in time and talk about how they were up 2-1 in that series and were an overtime goal away from being up 3-1, but I'll digress. But the Blackhawks series losing, you could understand it. I think they completely choked away and let that St. Louis series slip out of their fingers. To lose 3 of 4 games at home, inexcusable. So because I feel like they got outworked in that series and let that series slip away, they need to make right for that, in my opinion. And they have the roster to do so. I'm not giving them unreasonable goals here. Like if this you didn't hear me saying this last year, because I knew that the roster wasn't what it was. It wasn't a cup winning roster last year. It just wasn't. This is Hampus Lindholm and Charlie McAvoy is phenomenal on the back end to start with, and they have the depth up front. If you lose to Carolina or you lose to Toronto or the Rangers or whomever in the Eastern Conference, I just think it's a big disappointment. And then if you go to the finals, I mean, like I said, I mean, tell me who they play, but I think they could beat anybody. So I'll be disappointed, mainly because they let 19 slip through their fingers. And because of what Scott mentioned, how if it wasn't for Bergeron and Krejci taking these discounts, you aren't able to construct the roster around them right now. And you don't forget you have Martian and Pasternak at like 6 and change still. So given the fact that you only have one guy making market value, really, at least as a top player in McAvoy, it's kind of like they have no excuse not to. So I would be disappointed. My expectations have changed, and rightfully so.
I think that the most disappointing thing for me, especially if they go to the final and lose, would just be the fact that you really want Bergeron to end his career on, you know, a cup run or get at least another one. Say maybe he decides to come back one other year after this, but like, you know, that him and Krejci are at the end of their careers, and it would be most disappointing, and it would be really disappointing for the the team around them if they weren't able to pull that off for them. I think that that's just like the general feeling that you get and the respect that people have for Bergeron and wanting to make sure that the window, like they don't close the window without getting a Stanley Cup this year. I think just because this popped in my mind while you were talking, Brian, this was kind of funny. During the post-game press conference, it was kind of a stupid question. So this is probably why the answer was a little bit out of whack. But Dan Shaughnessy asked Jake DeBrusk about, like, why is this team better this year than last year? And, like, it kind of came across as, like, mean. And DeBrusk kind of, like, didn't know how to answer it. And he was like, well, we mostly have the same team as last year. Like, it's not, you know, we got Krejci back. But, like, in reality, the team had a lot of changes, from how the team started last year. Like, you don't have Lindholm at the beginning of the season. You don't have Krejci. You don't have Greer. Foligno's not playing the same way. Like, it just was kind of funny when he answered that question, like, no, we're pretty much the same team. Like, yeah, you guys are a lot of the same team, but you got to admit that the additions that you did get added so much.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, Jake, they didn't have the same Jake DeBrusk for the first half of last year.
So, no, they didn't. So, you know, his, by this time his last own year, he's asking for a also, trade.
Yeah, also a big part of that.
What is DeBrusk supposed to do? Is he supposed to, you know, explain to Dan Shaughnessy how the impact that Hampus Lindholm has in transition and pushing offense? And I mean, and like, you know, a guy like Shaughnessy has no idea who Pavel Zacha is. And like, I'm not saying Zacha is a superstar, but like, he's a very solid middle six forward that they added to this team that they didn't have last year. Like I said, you can almost, I know Krejci replaced Halla as the second line center, but let's remember, like, Zacha and Halla were the ones that got traded one for one. So in my mind, I've always kind of been like, you got Zacha for Halla, and then Krejci was the kind of like quote unquote free ad in the offseason that you added to this team. And I think one for one, and we've talked about it before, I think Zacha is probably a better player all around than Halla, and he's younger and he's bigger. I mean, like, I think tonight's a perfect example. Like, the game-winning goal is perfectly encapsulates what I mean when I say, like, Zaka's not lighting up in the score sheet, but he's doing a lot of great things to help them win games. Like, I know he missed the open net tonight.
He almost fucking scored.
I know. But he has hit a few of those too in recent games. But, you know, he's helping Krejci in the board battle. He gets the puck to Lindholm, down to Foligno, and then Hall. So he doesn't factor in on the score sheet, but he's very much a part of that goal.
You know what's weird? He actually did end up getting an assist on that.
Oh, really?
And Lindholm didn't. So somehow, and Zacha got the first assist. So Foligno's pass to Hall must have, like, just glanced off Zaka's stick or skate or something on its way through.
Interesting. Well, then, hey, that's
make
good
a
karma
redirection.
For him.
It did make a redirection. I thought it maybe went off Vasilevsky or someone or on the way through, but who knows? Maybe
good karma for him. But yeah, I mean, like, it's to that point. Like, Bridget, you mentioned AJ Greer. When you think about how is this team different than last year? Well, first of all, Linus Ullmark was not playing like a Vezina caliber goalie last year. He played really respectably last year, but like, he's like a Vezina candidate right now. So that's a big difference. And you know, you added Krejci, you added Zacha, you added Greer up front. And let's be honest, you added Nick Foligno. I said that last week too, but you added Nick Foligno. I mean, this is who he was most of his career, minus the last year and a half. Like, he was there in person, but he was not affecting the team at all. And this is how he affected teams that he played on in the past for the last 10 to 12 years of his NHL career. So you almost added him too on the up front. So yeah, it is a different team.
The right way to ask the question would have just been, what are you guys doing right this year? You know, that's caused your success. Like, you did no need to just be like, you guys sucked last year, what's the difference? Like, you could just been like, what's
say that.
Okay, no, but that's what, like, year. That's like what DeBrusk's facial expression was.
She's reading
like,
between the lines, Scott. You should try it sometime.
Yeah,
read between the lines.
Two quick comments on both those. First on Foligno, by the way, with that assist, already matched his season point total from last year. And then on Shaughnessy's, like, I don't know, you know, I'm not like gonna be the like I'm not gonna like gatekeep covering the Bruins. Like the more media, the better. But you could tell that it was like, it was sort of, you know, the Dan Shaughnessy, like, I guess I should write about the Bruins moment, because, you know, like obviously he's not there that much. Like, hockey's not his main sport. It's baseball, well, football, and basketball.
His daughter plays college hockey for Yale.
Yeah. But, you know, he doesn't do much Bruins, but like, it's fine. Like, whatever. If Shaughnessy's writing about the Bruins, that's fine. But yeah, but to your point, like, it's obviously a question that like the players have been asked a million times already this year, like, you know, 10 wins ago. But
if you're not there all the time, well, you don't know like what people have already covered and like if you're being redundant in different things. So anyhow, I just thought it was funny that just the answer was like didn't make a whole lot of sense, because I think the question was just, he was very confused.